So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Mikey wins! Just pinned Steve Austin in the middle of the ring!
Austin clotheslines Mikey!
Mikey is still the world heavyweight champion. Austin is stunned. He can't believe it.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and we are not coming to you from our usual Review Away studios. We've had to Skype this one in.
Yes. Well, hey, you didn't have to say that. We could have...
Do you think anyone would have noticed?
Unless you cut out or unless there is a delay. They would.
So we are live in our Review Away studios here at the Fight Network.
Yes. Wow.
Ready for another review. And Wei, this is a... You know, we've had a pretty good run, but there's the odd time that these reviews become very difficult to do, and I think this week would qualify as one of them. We are recording this show 3 hours before it will be posted up.
3 hours before it will be posted. We're pretty much forced into this situation because it's been such a busy week for us at the Fight Network. You know, with the expo, with the UFC, with the 10-hour podcast. We've had to do this at the last minute, which we don't usually like to do. But nonetheless, it'll be a fantastic review, and you won't know the difference.
You know, I said after we did our 10-hour podcast, people were like, oh, wow, you must have been exhausted. And I was like, no, I'm okay. My body has, I think, over the last 2 days, after spending all that time at the MMA Expo on the weekend, I think my body was trying to tell me something these last 2 days, because I have just felt completely fucked since like Monday.
Uh-huh.
I was just incredibly dead. And then today, I ended up getting like, I think had a migraine in my life until today when I got to work and I had this light headache that gradually became like a pain. I don't know how to even describe it, but I was fucked. And I had to go do an improv class after and wanted to vomit the entire time. And then I came home. My stomach has never been in so much pain. And I realized my body is turning on me here at the age of 27.
Well, you've been mistreating it. That's why. I haven't been very good either. I just like my diet over the past couple, you know, the past week. And the whole driving thing too, driving back home for like an hour after work, after these long days, it's so dangerous.
I drove home Sunday after the podcast, I was like falling asleep driving.
Yeah.
Like horrendous.
Yeah, me too.
I was like, this is like painful to try and stay awake here. And knowing in the back of my head, I am going home to sleep for an hour before I have to go back to do another radio show Sunday night. And I kept telling myself, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And here on Wednesday, last night, we finished Raw and that was it. My body was like, no more, fucker. I'm turning off.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And I went in late to work today. I was supposed to have today off, but I could not get today off. So I at least took the morning off and I had this plan to wake up early because I had all this other shit to do and body was like, no, fucker. And I slept for like 10 hours straight. I can't remember the last time I slept for 10 hours.
Yeah, whatever, man. It's just this week. And then after this week, it'll be a lot easier for all of us. Once the UFC is out of town and back to normal. Anyway,
so you left November to Remember till tonight to watch the entire thing. I don't know how you did it. I was all night long. I was like, I told my girlfriend, I was like, okay, I've got to record a show with Wei tonight. I'm half positive it's not going to happen tonight. I didn't think there was a chance you were going to finish this show tonight.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it in double time, actually.
You're intense. I can't believe it.
I watched it in 2x speed. Thanks to YouTube's new HTML5 feature, you can watch it.
Really?
Yeah, in double time. So that definitely sped things up.
Well, that's good.
I recommend it. That should be a feature built into everything. You should be able to live life in twice the time. Save everybody a ton of time. Anyway.
November the 18th, 1995, Wei.
Yes.
Do you remember where you were on this day?
Absolutely not. Why would I?
I don't know. Just guessing here.
I don't even remember the year. I don't really remember anything.
95 was a blur to you?
It absolutely was. Really was. There's nothing happening. Nothing. Nothing eventful.
Yeah, 95 was a boring year, I think, in hindsight.
Well, you know, 93 was a big year. 94 was...
The baseball strike?
Yeah. And 95, we had nothing.
No. Quiet year.
We measure our life with the success of the baseball teams.
Yeah. This was a... 95 was when Jay fans were starting to realize, we're not winning another one, ever. Mm-hmm. So Joey Styles opens up the show, and he welcomes us to the third annual November to Remember and runs down the card, calls it the greatest night in ECW history. Very presumptuous here. Could be the greatest night in ECW history.
Well, that's a positive attitude to have.
Very positive attitude from Joey Styles. Some would say jinxing yourself, though.
Well, we'll see.
Paulie dangerously then promises it will be a November to Remember, which, based on what me and Wei just described, he was a liar here.
Yeah, he was.
Well, I don't remember this November too well. I know I went to the Santa Claus parade this year when I was a 11-year-old.
Yeah, we were 11, and I at least don't have that power. I don't have that power to remember the month of any specific month of my 11-year-old life.
You're missing out. This is my one skill, Wei.
Well, I wish I had that. Uh-oh.
No, I'm still here. Oh, I'm just taking it all in. This is good. We go our first match. Fuck off, everybody. We gave you 10 hours this weekend. This is our Mulligan podcast, the review away of November to Remember. We got the broad
podcast, and therefore we have no money to put into it. Thus, we rely on technology like this.
I think I'm going to upgrade my internet connection in the new year. My connection just sucks here at home. It really does. It's a pain in the ass when we're doing these live things. And on top of that, it's a pain in the ass when I'm uploading this stuff afterwards, because I'll upload stuff like the law. When I upload it at TSN, it's retarded how fast it is. Like, I can upload a show in less than a minute, and here on this connection, it could be like 15 minutes.
Wow.
It's just like all these minutes of my life, I'm just like, what could I have done in those 14 minutes?
Yeah, a lot of things.
And then it's compounded because I got uploaded on iTunes. It's just slow as hell here.
Oh, boy. Okay, enough of the technical drama. Let's get into the ECW. ECFNW.
First matchup of the November to Remember, the greatest night in ECW history, the Broad Street Bully against Don E. Allen. Don't know what the E stands for, but Joel Gertner, I guess, Don Extreme Allen. Joel Gertner is just the straight ring announcer at this time.
And much, like half the size.
And much cleaner.
Yes.
Verbally. He introduces Bubba Ray Dudley as a special guest ring announcer as the Dudley clan comes out, and Bubba's in a tuxedo, and the fans are really into him here. He says he's no longer nervous or insecure, and he goes to do the introduction and does the ripoff of Michael Buffer, but when he gets to the word rumble, he starts stuttering, and Big Dick Dudley hits him with a crutch, and then Bubba Ray powerbombs Don E. Allen. Bully gets on top, and Bubba then powerbombs the Bully, and then what happens here? Bubba pins the Bully?
I think he pins
him. This was supposed to be a singles match.
Yeah.
But Bubba Ray ends up joining the match, and he pins the Broad Street Bully at 1:06.
I suppose, did the ref actually count this? I don't know. I don't know whether it was an official match or not, but it doesn't matter. It was just something, you know, a comedic opener to pop the crowd. And man, I really don't know how well this gimmick would fly today, but back then, and with this audience, it was like, they loved it, man. They ate this up, this stuttering thing.
It's something that I'm sure I will get complaints about, but it seems that anything that came from ECW, especially in this time period, it's kind of viewed amongst hardcore fans as sacred, as nothing was bad that came out of this promotion during the mid-90s.
Oh, the tie-dye was great.
Yeah. That stuttering gimmick.
The Zubaz pants on Sandman, they were awesome. They're hardcore.
I'll talk about the Sandman later. But this company was, to me, just this show in general, was just a show that this company was perfect for its time. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to... I don't know if it ages well. I'll put it that way.
Right. Well, what does... though, is this audience, this crowd, this atmosphere, there's nothing bad you could say about it. It's like, man, it just looks so much fun to be there with these people in this environment, just loving everything. You know?
That was one of the big strengths of the company, was that it was so hot that you wanted to be part of that crowd. And it's something, whenever you see a hot crowd, it makes the product feel hot. Yeah. Look at the Survivor Series this past year was a perfect example of that. It felt like the WWE was really, really hot because the crowd was into so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that really comes through to the audience.
Yeah.
So, watching at home.
Especially for all these ECW shows, any of the shows that we've reviewed going back, the crowd is really half the star of the show, seriously.
Paulie Dangerously is in the ring, and he asks for them to dim the lights, and the crowd goes nuts. And then the lights turn on, and Sabu is in the ring, and gets a massive pop, shakes Paulie's hand, and it signals the return to ECW, because he had just left WCW at this point, and chants of thank you, and... there were constant cutaways during this to Joey Styles in the back, where he just threw in all these catchphrases, which I found a little annoying.
This was, obviously the home video version. Not only the home video, but I'm assuming you saw it on YouTube as well, which was actually the WWE on-demand version of the ECW home video. So who knows what type of tampering was done to the original footage, but at least on the original ECW home video version, they would constantly cut back to Joey Styles in the booth with his facial reactions. So I don't know, maybe it's just something ECW did for their home tapes.
Jason then comes down to the ring, and Styles is scratching himself as Jason enters the ring, and leads to Jason against Conan, with Taz as the babyface guest referee. And this was, Taz gets...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Isn't this Taz's part of Taz's reintroduction as his new character, upgrading from the Tazmaniac before?
Yeah, this was during that transition here, where he got into the ring and he says that ECW won't allow him to wrestle, and therefore he's going to be the referee here. And Jason insults Taz, and... basically, the bell rings, Conan hits Jason with a big ocean splash, and gets the win in 14 seconds.
14
like
seconds,
that.
Yep. And at this point, in my very tired state, I was ecstatic. I was hoping all these matches were this short. But you know what? No, this was... I suppose this was your undercard, and maybe they just realized that, hey... nobody wants to see 14-minute matches between Jason Knight and Conan. So why not get storyline in here, push the guys that you're going to push, get it over with for that.
Yeah, if everyone always talks about Heyman booking guys to their strengths and not weaknesses, and that was evident throughout this show of guys who were never overexposed out there. Can always – and some of these guys, you just – you scratch your head at how big they got, and you can see even in these some of these short matches. I mean, some of these guys here on this show was just it was amazing what Heyman got out of some of these guys.
Totally. Although I don't think there's any saving of Conan in this form, though. With the God, what, oh, man, with this the mummy wrap around his face, like a, well, what do you call that?
Well, this was when he was, I think he was with Promo Azteca at that time in Mexico, so he hadn't become the thug Conan that he would years later.
It's like where he was wearing a net, like a net on his face, like a basketball net. Like a mesh bag around his head.
It was 95. It was a hot look at that point.
Oh, okay. Then he just takes it off. At the end of the match, he just takes it off.
Yeah, it was a winner unmasked match.
Okay.
Maybe it was a, I don't know.
A winner. The winner gets to get rid of his mask. Okay. I suppose this was really mainly to build for Taz's involvement later on in the evening.
Yeah, yeah, it would play in later on in an angle. But we go to our third matchup of the evening. Really, you didn't have any, it was just links with Joey Styles between matches here. It's very straightforward, a live event being taped for this. So not a whole lot of, no backstage involvement or anything like that. Go to Stevie Richards and El Puerto Ricano. The Puerto Rican, for those that don't speak Spanish.
Oh, okay. The Puerto Rican. It's like saying
the Asian.
Chinese.
The Blue Meanie is spotted in the front row, and this was actually his debut with the company, and he gave Stevie a Flock of Seagulls t-shirt and then hops the rail to hug Stevie. And the matchup began. We saw a moonsault to the floor and then a quebrada for a two count. A bunch of offense here from El Puerto Ricano. And we then saw a suicide dive to the floor onto Meanie, but then Stevie Richards comes back with two Stevie bombs, and then he is sent back into the ring. Meanie comes in, and Meanie is sent to the top rope and misses a moonsault, which was quite the impressive feat for this very, very large Blue Meanie. And then El Puerto Ricano has a roll-up for a two-count, but then takes the Stevie kick, and Richards gets the win in another very short match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are just very quick squash matches. Not much to them other than to showcase these characters. And that's fine.
Yeah, you're building guys. I mean, no reason you can't do this. This is almost like a mix that it seems a lot of people would love to see now in WWE, where you know you use jobbers, but you can put over your other guys, and it builds to the bigger matches later on in the show.
Yeah, I think you need to make me interested in a man first, in a character first, before you can get me to watch a 10-plus minute match with the guy and be fully captivated.
I always like a short match being thrown into a card. You don't want to sit there for 8 15-minute matches. I like having the one-minute surprise finish come in there. It just keeps the pace faster.
Yeah, absolutely.
From there, fuck! I could see you. How did we get here? We're in the studios for real this time.
Yes.
You sound so much clearer. You're not breaking up.
Yes, we have had some technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I guess we should just continue on with the review, but it feels like hours and hours since we started this.
Feels like the next day.
Wow, it feels like a reason to post this late.
Yes. All right, where did we leave off?
I believe we were talking about the Eliminators, who are accompanied by Jason to take on the Pitbulls, who are accompanied by Francine. And, wait, what did you think of Perry Saturn?
Perry Saturn, boy.
1995 well, called, I don't, and Perry answered.
Okay, I don't know if this was not necessarily 1995. This was Perry Saturn with a ponytail and not much else, just the ponytail. I don't think this was 95. I think this was like an alternate reality where this was hip.
This was like combinations of Soundgarden, Acid, and ECW coming together to create
Perry Saturn.
Perry Saturn.
Yes, that explains it.
So the match kicks off. This match was kind of all built around kind of like big high spots, very much Japanese influenced. You could see the Eliminators were John Cronus and Perry Saturn. We saw a dragon suplex by Saturn to Pitbull number 2, and then he was sent to the floor. Cronus hit a moonsault. They got the heat on Pitbull number 2 throughout the match, including a top rope elbow drop from Saturn as Styles did his Randy Savage impression. There was a top rope Hurricane Rana for a two count. They would continually go for near falls on Pitbull number number two, and then number one would come in and break it up. Saturn hit a Tiger Bomb. The Pitbulls then hit their guillotine, but Jason broke up the cover. And then this led to Cronus with a handspring back elbow to Pitbull number two. But the Pitbulls came back and double-teamed Cronus and end up finishing him with the Super Power Bomb at 11 minutes and 2 seconds. And then sexual assault was committed on Francine in the post-match.
What did they do? I forgot what happened.
To Francine?
Yeah.
Jason ran in, tackled Francine, and then forced himself on her by making out with her.
Oh, yes. And got on top of her in a very suggestive position.
Very suggestive. And then ended up taking a chair to the head as the Eliminators beat down the Pitbulls with a chair and then hit the total elimination, that being their finish and not the Pride tournament.
Yeah.
On the Pitbulls.
Well, thank you for that clarification. You know, this was a spot fest, really, and that was the style, I suppose, of the Eliminators. And the crowd was, again, hot for everything. Everything. Yeah.
The Eliminators had just come into the company, so they would end up getting very over in the next couple of years in ECW as kind of the staple of the tag division. Up next, Psicosis and Rey Mysterio in a Mexican death match.
How does this differ from a American death match or Japanese death match or Canadian?
A Mexican death match has to feature a flying hurricanrana.
Okay.
Psicosis came out and he was the heel because he was wearing what Joey Styles referred to as his Harley Davidson leather jacket.
Yes.
He's Americanized.
Yes, that's right. Yes, that was the heel look. What signified a heel? Leather.
Motor Psicosis.
Ha!
Mysterio is billed as 136 pounds.
I think that's
less than I think you even weigh.
Yeah, actually. Yes, that's true.
He weighs a lot more than 136 today.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say way more. He probably weighs a lot more than me today. But back then it looked legit.
He got into the ring and he gave Psicosis the middle finger.
Yes,
6-1,
wow.
Fuck you. And 30 seconds into the match, Mysterio hit a somersault off the top into a hurricanrana for the pin. This looked insanely dangerous.
This was a dragonrana.
The dragonrana.
Yeah.
This was performed
by the Dragon Kid.
This looked incredible, and he nearly died executing it.
Well, he doesn't do it too much. He can't do it
anymore. He can't do it now. There's no way. This is one of the most dangerous maneuvers this guy could possibly perform. Mysterio gets tossed at the barricade and tries to land on top feet first, but falls onto the cement floor. How these fans could possibly chant "you fucked up" at a man who just fell onto cement?
Oh, they could chant "you fucked up" if they just look for opportunities to chant that. That's, you know.
If I was a performer and I had just done this and landed on cement and that's what they chanted at me, I would A, want to attack these fans, and B, I would want to put on the shittiest match I could possibly put on for these people. Like a 10-minute sleeper hold followed up by a rear chin lock spot for a submission win.
I have a feeling if a little old lady tripped going up the stairs, these fans would circle around and chant, "You fucked up, old lady. You fucked up."
Horrible people in this audience in Philadelphia.
No, that's just part of the course. I mean, that's what makes the ECW fans, you know, so passionate.
Psicosis hits a moonsault back into the ring. We should have explained the Mexican death match rules.
Yes.
You could pin an opponent, and then they had 10 seconds to get up. So basically your WWE last man standing match.
Yes, that's right.
So we got lots of pinfalls in this. Psicosis got the first one after a moonsault into the ring at 2.5 minutes. And then Psicosis continued on with the heat as Mysterio would get to his feet. Psicosis would ram Mysterio chest first into the corner twice and then hit a corkscrew leg drop off of the top for another pin. Mysterio continues to get up. There was a DDT onto a chair by Psicosis, and then he attacks him with a chair and a moonsault onto the chair for another pin. Mysterio gets up, holds the chair on his knees during the moonsault spot and makes his comeback, hits a clothesline to the floor, and then goes into the crowd with an acai moonsault. And then Mysterio and Psicosis fight all over the arena with a chair. Mysterio rams the chair into his face on the stage and then climbs up to the higher level at the ECW arena, hits a flying hurricanrana from the top level to the secondary level. gets the pin, returns to the ring, and he gets the win as Psychosis cannot get to his feet. 11 minutes and 47 seconds, and this got a huge ECW chant. These two, this was just about a month before they would have their match at the Super J Cup that year.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Excellent match. Excellent match. To me, it seemed a little short, though. To be deemed a classic, this ran for what, like 10 or
just under 12 minutes.
12 minutes. It seemed a bit short to me, but nonetheless, yeah, a great match, one of many that they would have. I feel like the term death match is a bit misleading, though, especially in the context of ECW when you have burning tables and whatnot. But nonetheless, you know, very impressive.
Mexicans don't use fire or weapons.
Well, they use
aerial maneuvers.
They use height, yes. So
gravity. Yes, so a very strong match from these two. This was during a period where they had lost Eddie and Malenko and Benoit, so they kind of went in the direction of, you know, the Lucha Libre style, mm-hmm. and kind of incorporating that into the product and kind of always diversifying the card with mm-hmm. something different. Jason comes into the ring and calls Mysterio back, and he wants to manage Rey, and he calls him his little supreme fighting machine. And he insults Mysterio, who lays out Jason and takes a badly executed Hurricanrana. And then the Eliminators come in to save Jason and attack Mysterio, but 911 makes the save, hits a double chokeslam, and then Mysterio jumps onto the shoulders of 911, who had a very short run in ECW and was one of Paul's projects of trying to get this man over as a monster heel, babyface.
I guess it didn't work out.
Nope.
Maybe he should have waited maybe 6 years.
Oh, Jesus.
What?
That's horrible.
Would have been a monster babyface for sure.
And now no one ever knows what happened to this guy, and I have a feeling he goes by the name 411. Oh boy,
good to see you're still witty as ever.
I try,
despite the teleportation into the studios.
Yeah, this was awkward. I don't know where we are. Next up is our tag match: the Sandman and Too Cold Scorpio, accompanied by Woman, taking on Public Enemy for the ECW tag titles. And Scorpio is a double champion. He is also the television champion in ECW. And the stip here was that whoever got the winning pinfall would get an ECW title shot later on tonight against Mikey Whipwreck.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The fans chant, "Please don't go," at Public Enemy, who are just about to bolt for WCW.
Which, to me, really gives away any possibility that either one of those two could win this match.
ECW would sometimes book, you know, this would happen later on, but if you remember the last night the Dudleys were in, they ended up putting the titles on them, and then it led to an impromptu title defense against Tommy Dreamer and the returning Raven. Mm. And they always tried to surprise people. So it's not always predictable in a ECW booking. Scorpio challenges them at the start to a dance-off, and Styles says that white man can't dance, and then he makes an Alex Wright joke, who I thought was a fantastic dancer, with the armpit dance.
Okay. Yeah.
Das Wunderkind.
I don't know how good he was. It's hard to say. Maybe interpretive dance.
They cut to Joey Styles dancing.
Yes, they did. One of many.
They all dance, and it leads to Sandman dancing, and then Woman comes in, but the heels attack Public Enemy. And then they go to the floor, they set up a table, and Sandman puts Johnny Grunge through a table. And then Sandman is put on the upright part of the broken table and takes a somersault from Rocco Rock over the top to the floor. Scorpio then broke a cover with a broom as Rocco Rock was going to pin Sandman after a Hurricanrana. Scorpio hits a moonsault to Rock, but then Grunge breaks up the fall. And then Rock goes for the drive-by. Which is Public Enemy's finish, but Scorpio moves, and it ends up with Rocco Rock hitting his partner, Johnny Grunge, and Sandman, who had just been laying there after being taken out, rolls over and pins Johnny Grunge at 8 minutes and 21 seconds, and therefore the Sandman will get the ECW title shot later tonight. Sandman was a horrendous wrestler. No. To me, the greatest creation in ECW was the Sandman, because this man had was so limited and yet got so over in this company.
Mm-hmm. Well, for all his limitations in the ring, I guess you could look at what charisma he did have, and you know, that itself is high quality.
He wore those old Sean Kemp Reebok shoes as his ring attire.
Like, were they pumps?
No, they weren't pumps.
They were Sean Kemp.
They were like high tops, but they had the big black up and down.
Oh, okay. Those are Sean Kemp shoes.
They were Sean Kemp shoes because I had a pair.
You had a pair. That's how you know. Okay. Did you also have a pair of zebra pants?
The Zubaz?
Yeah.
No, I did not.
No. Well, you should get one of those. You could be the Sandman. You could be. You could totally be like a skinnier Sandman for Halloween. Just
drink beer and be uncoordinated in the ring.
Yeah. You could do that.
So afterwards, Sandman is out, but he comes to after Scorpio pours beer on him to revive the Sandman. And as Scorpio pours the beer into his mouth, Sandman gets to his feet and he starts dancing.
Uh-huh. It really, to me, this felt like a bit of a comedy match. And the way the result ended up, it felt like, I don't know, not necessarily the type of build you'd expect for a world TV world title. But again, I'm very unfamiliar with this era of ECW and ECW in general, so I don't know what type of build-up Sandman had going into this.
We go to a recap of the feud between Bill Alfonso and Todd Gordon, one of the few video packages on the show, and it dates back to Sandman defeating Shane Douglas for the ECW title. This feud goes so far back that it was when Sandman won a title that he's going to be challenging for later tonight.
Wow.
And Alfonso's gimmick was that he was a referee with the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission, and it all led to him making these crooked calls, and then 911 teased a chokeslam on Alfonso and eventually hit it for a massive pop. And thus we had the heel referee Bill Alfonso. So Bill Alfonso versus Commissioner Todd Gordon, with Beulah McGillicuddy as the guest referee. And Alfonso and McGillicuddy would have a big match coming out of this eventually, in a match that would end up saving Alfonso's job at the time. Commissioner Gordon comes out in a tracksuit with taped fists, and Alfonso comes off the apron and slaps Gordon, who goes into the audience. Alfonso then lays out Beulah with the clothesline of all clotheslines, because she would be out for the entire match from this clothesline.
Well, she's a woman. They can't take...
They can't take clotheslines.
Especially from a man.
Unless they're hanging clothes from a clothesline.
Ah. Don't complain about this. If you're a girlfriend of any listener...
I'm saying this was Alfonso's heel line he maybe was using on her as he hit her with this.
Oh, okay. Let's clarify that.
So Gordon then tackles down Alfonso. This seemed to be the match that had the most heat on the show thus far, and was probably the worst match in the ring.
I completely agree with that. But I was into it because it just seemed like everybody was having such fun watching it, and it seemed like... You know, like, for two non-wrestlers, I think they had a really fun match, and they did a really good job.
It was, like, sloppy as hell, and it looked like two people having a real fight that you would see out in the street who have no idea what fighting is, but they are wanting to hurt someone.
Yeah, but, like, every punch they threw received a huge reaction.
Because they looked stiff as shit.
Okay.
Looked like they were totally walloping each other.
Maybe.
It's like, let's not even try and work this, because we can't throw work punches.
Well, it's not like they were bruised afterwards, but like, it was fun to it. This match was a lot of fun.
Alfonso went down after a series of punches. Both got up, and Gordon blocked a number of shots, knocked down Alfonso. He jumped off the ropes and landed feet first onto Alfonso. Alfonso came back with a low blow, and then Gordon repeatedly rams Alfonso's face into the chair on the floor when they make their way outside, and now Fonzie's bleeding. Both look so gassed here going around the ring. Gordon then grabs the frying pan, and then Fonzie takes the frying pan, but Gordon hits a low blow, and the big spot of the match is he smashes Fonzie with the pan and gets a visionary fall. And then backup guest referee Taz runs in. He goes to count two, but before he counts three, he attacks Todd Gordon and then helps Bill Alfonso get on top, and he counts three for Bill Alfonso and thus turns heel. 7 minutes and 5 seconds, and this led to the crowd chanting Sabu afterwards.
Taz begins to cut a promo explaining why he is now a villain. Yep. Why he's a bad guy. And why is that?
Because he's sick of people like Paul Heyman, who don't have to pay their own bills, like him. Because Paul Heyman didn't care when he was out hurt, and Fonzie's going to put money in his pocket. And says how Heyman lives at home with his parents and doesn't have to worry about finances.
Ooh.
Heat. Ouch. And Styles says that Taz wouldn't sell out to the WWF or WCW, but he sold out to Bill Alfonso. And Taz then yelled at a fan at ringside and basically challenged him. And this would begin the Taz heel turn. And you notice the chants for Sabu. And they would keep those two apart all the way until April of 97 for the Barely Legal pay-per-view. That's how long they built that one up coming out of this show. A year and a half.
That is incredible. And how frequent were... Oh, that was the first pay-per-view, yeah. I suppose. And but ECW TV was once a week? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. That's
and then they had their major shows each month at the arena.
It's very impressive.
Taz ended up getting onto his back to challenge the fan to come in and telling the fan he would fuck him up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is really good stuff from Taz.
Yeah, this was when they kind of let him go as a heel, and yeah. It worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
The Sandman comes out with Woman, but before he can even get to the ring, he's attacked by Steve Austin, who hits him with the stun gun on the guardrail. And then he grabs a beer, and Styles says, Austin's popping open a beer, mocking the Sandman.
Yeah, this was so great. I never really knew that these two had any interaction in ECW, and what an odd sight to see.
And as a result, Austin backdoored himself into the title match, and we got a ECW title match with champion Mikey Whipwreck defending against Steve Austin. And Austin says that for this match, Mikey Whipwreck is going to be Eric Bischoff. Because Austin hates Eric Bischoff. Yes. Austin attacks Whipwreck. They go to the floor. Gets the heat right away by beating away at Mikey. Fans were even chanting Hogan during this match.
So Steve Austin comes back with a big boot and a leg drop.
Yes. He then hit the stun gun in the ring, but Mikey kicked out at two. And Styles just did a really great job of trying to get across Mikey Whipwreck as the underdog. There was a weird edit in here where they suddenly just cut to the finish. It was like this big jump cut.
There were a number of weird edits on this tape. I don't know if it was just our tape or what it was, but yeah.
It's very strange. And all of a sudden we just get Whipwreck rolling up Austin, and he pulls the tights and pins Austin. So he keeps the title.
There is no way you, by watching this, you would envision Steve Austin would become the person that he is. He just looked anything. I mean, okay, he looked like an entertaining guy, sure, but nowhere near a top babyface level. Just a man with awful, awful long blonde hair.
And shitty ring gear.
Yeah, annoying as shit. But this was Stone Cold.
Yeah, and this was stuff where he was... You know, his promos were really over at the time, and he was really developing himself here. The post-match, Austin attacked Whipwreck and then sent him to the floor. And in fact, this match is talked about on Austin's new DVD with Paul Heyman being interviewed of how the plan was for Austin to win the title here, but Austin insisted he lose because it would help his character that much more as this frustrated talent. And here he gets upset by Mikey Whipwreck and how Austin kind of pitched to lose in this match, thinking it would be better for his character.
Wow.
From there, we get the return of Sabu taking on the Extreme Shaw, Hack Myers.
The Extreme what?
Shaw.
What is that?
I don't know. I don't know what a Shaw is. Okay. I think it was a burly man in leather.
Oh.
Pauly Dangerously is in the ring to introduce Sabu. Crowd was super hot for Sabu. And immediately, Sabu goes after the leg of Hack Myers. The homicidal, suicidal, genocidal Sabu goes for a leg lock to start the match. And Myers then grabs a chair. We see a slingshot off the ropes that sends the chair into his face. Sabu later goes for a Fujiwara armbar, and there were actually chants of boring and go home in the early part of this match. We saw a slingshot back elbow off the ropes for a two count. Myers made a comeback with a double knee sledge off the top, but Sabu had his foot on the ropes during the count. Sabu went for a DDT to Myers coming off of his shoulders, and then a series of high spots from Sabu, including a pescado over the top into a Hurricane Rana that you've seen Petey Williams do in TNA over the last couple of years, and then running off a chair into the barricade on Myers. They fight on the floor, and this is where Styles notes that this is what they told him not to do in WCW, taking a shot at where Sabu had just left. There was a running somersault over the top rope to put Myers through the table, and then Sabu hit the first ever Atomic Arabian Facebuster, basically a three-quarter roll off the top rope with a chair landing on top of Myers' face, and Sabu gets the win. And afterwards, they did kind of the mutual respect deal where Sabu gave credit to Myers for a hard-fought match, and they definitely, after shaking hands, clearly they wanted to give the crowd a big return here for Sabu, but also trying to kind of make Hack Myers in the process as well.
And what happened to Hack Myers? He went to Shawing. Went back to Shawing.
I guess so.
Okay. Well, you can watch Sabu, in a TNA, or you can watch Sabu in a WWE, or you can watch him in any context, but man, it does not equal Sabu in ECW. There's just something about Sabu in this environment with this audience that just makes him really special. And I really enjoyed this match just to see this crowd anticipate all these moves and to watch this guy that is so incredibly over.
Yeah, I mean, this was this crowd was so hot to see him back in the company, and this was really at that peak period for him where everyone just thought from kind of 94 onwards that this guy was like this undiscovered talent that everyone was raving about.
Yeah, like when you watch him, when I watch him these days, I can't help but look at how sloppy everything he does is, like how little caution he puts into everything. But in ECW, like in a match like this, it just seems perfect. Like his style seems perfect for what this is.
And then we go to the main event, Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer against Raven and Cactus Jack. And they play up that Terry Funk is contemplating retirement because his body just can't take it anymore.
1995, folks.
Yes. He wrestled 2 months ago in October. And Cactus Jack is the latest disciple of Raven, and he comes down wearing this Dungeon of Doom shirt, this airbrushed Dungeon of Doom shirt with Shark on the front.
What is the storyline with Foley at this point?
He was sick of the hardcore fans in ECW, and he wanted to go to WCW. He wanted his job back in WCW, and that was he had turned on the fans. And Jack cut a promo on Terry Funk, calling out his old ass, and then we got a chance of We Want Fire from these Philadelphia maniacs.
Mm-hmm.
They fight on the floor. Funk brought a garbage can full of weapons into the ring. Stevie Richards was in the corner of Jack and Raven, and he got put into a shopping cart and sent into the steel post by Funk and Dreamer. There was a cheese grater brought into the match that cut up Raven's forehead. The crowd was really hot for this match. Heels got the heat on Dreamer. They used a chain to clothesline his throat. Jack then took off his shirt, revealing another shirt with Eric Bischoff's face on it that read on the back, "Forgive me, Uncle Eric."
Oh, this shirt was awesome. And then at this point, was it Dreamer? Dreamer or Funk, one of them, pulls the shirt above Jack's head. So Eric's face is just stretched over Jack's head, and he starts punching the face. Shirt was great.
There's a big chair shot by Tommy to Jack. Funk then drops the shopping cart right onto Raven. Cactus got a visionary fall on Terry Funk, but there was no referee. Bill Alfonso ran in, but this led to Funk kicking out. And then Taz comes in, and he gets on top of Funk, but Tommy Dreamer stops him, and they basically did this stare down between Dreamer and Taz, who had been best friends before this night. Mm-hmm. And here Taz has turned, and Tommy Dreamer finds himself juxtaposed to his good friend Taz.
He's conflicted.
He is very conflicted, and they just have this brief stare before Raven takes out Tommy Dreamer. It was this very dramatic, what have you done, stare.
Yeah.
Just brief. And then there were a pair of DDTs and a pile driver delivered by Tommy Dreamer to Raven, and then Terry Funk rolled over, and he got the pinfall on Raven. 14 minutes and 35 seconds, and kind of just went off the air. Cactus fought with Terry Funk up the aisle. He attacked Terry Funk with a chair, and then Joey Styles just signed off, and that was it.
Yeah.
The show was done.
That was it. We ran out of tape.
Yes. So,
So like, where exactly did this show air?
This would have aired on, I think this was just like a home video for them.
So they just, this never went to broadcast. They would just film these and then put them on tape?
I really don't know. Like, I wasn't getting, like, they taped their hardcore TV, but these were like their major arena events, which I'm pretty sure were just like home videos you could buy at the time.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I really didn't think this match was that great. To me, it just seemed like a plunder match.
You got to think about it for the time where these were still really rare and guys didn't do a whole lot of them.
Sure. And that's why I feel like I can't really accurately judge this show, because I feel like so much of ECW is like, you had to have been there. You had to have been following these storylines. You had to have just – it's so much of ECW is context. And for somebody like myself who is so unfamiliar with these characters, with these people, I can only judge the work rate, and I can only judge what I see on this tape. And
Wasn't that great?
I didn't have a great time watching this, no.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the fact that, you know, we didn't get ECW's TV up here in Canada, so we don't have a lot of the reference points of ECW at the time. Really, the only way to follow it was, like, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, which was all, it's not like it was easily, you know, something that you could follow so that you understand all the angles going on at the time. There were a lot of guys that Paul Heyman clearly saw as like little pet projects that he could build up, whether it be Hack Myers, 911, Sabu. Some clicked, some did not. You could see a lot of guys that you wanted to hide certain weaknesses by. But watching this in 2011, as I said earlier, I didn't think it aged that well. And you hit it right on the head that ECW, especially at this time period, it's very much about the context of the time.
But it could be different. I mean, you know, I feel like this is a show, if you were an ECW fan at this time, or maybe an ECW convert who really understands what they were doing, you can look back at the show very fondly. So I think it could go either way, depending on whether or not this is the type of style, this is the type of show for you. So watch it and decide for yourself.
All right. Well, let's go to some feedback, see what you thought about this.
Go ahead, John. Let me just... Oh, fuck.
Okay, we'll start with Patrick McCarley. I just watched this event over the summer. I enjoyed seeing Austin's ECW work. Mysterio and Psychosis had great chemistry and were very young at this point. The show was uneven. What does that mean? The show was uneven. But ECW overall was a welcome alternative to the lackluster WWF and WCW at the time.
Maybe he means that parts were good, but parts weren't.
Okay.
Ross Bowler, this card to me was all about Rey Mysterio Jr. and Psychosis. What an insane match. It was really the first time I saw high-flying Mexican wrestling, and what a show they put on. I was also a big fan of the Eliminators, such an intense, unique tag team, with Saturn being a true badass and having his best run by far in ECW, while Cronus had such off-the-wall promos. Finally, thank God for Paul Heyman letting Steve Austin have somewhere to be himself away from WCW. And I feel strongly that ECW's exposure got the attention of Vince and the WWE. Without the ECW run, I'm not sure Austin 316 may have been born.
Oh, there's no question how influential ECW was on everybody. Mm-hmm. Lots of people, I think, took a lot from ECW at the time. Dennis Amaya, I went into this show not being a fan of ECW, but it did have some good points. It was a rather hit-and-miss show overall. The first couple of matches were nothing. It was so weird to see people like Austin, Saturn, and Taz with hair. The Eliminators match was good, as was the main event tag match. The real highlight for me was the Psychosis Mysterio death match. It's almost always good when both these guys wrestle each other. They have had better matches, though. I never liked ECW, so I didn't enjoy the show all that much, especially when it came to the hardcore stuff and the weapon shots. The crowd definitely made most ECW shows. They were so passionate and interested in what they were watching. 5 out of 10 show for me.
David Banks, I started watching this company when ECW stood for Eastern Championship Wrestling, and I remember always looking forward to November to Remember. This was their WrestleMania, and they hyped it up like it was as big as WrestleMania. I always loved how they would go through all the matches and recap the feuds to the music of Guns N' Roses, November Rain. ECW stood for change, something different, something you never saw before. A place where new stars were born and old stars were reborn. Yes, they were hardcore, but that didn't mean that it was all about tables, chairs, and blood. They were gritty and sometimes over the top, but there was something about ECW that made us keep watching. They gave us what we wanted at the time, and at the time, wrestling was like a Saturday morning cartoon, and ECW was that one show for an older group of fans. Wrestling needed ECW and should thank the little company in the bingo hall out of Philly for changing the business and giving it a major slap in the face.
Yeah, and their storytelling at the time was such a big asset of of what got them through. As we mentioned, you know, Taz and Sabu, this was the beginning of their 18-month program, and some of the stuff with Cactus Jack and The Flock with Raven, they did some amazing storytelling in this company.
And I think that goes back to what we were just saying about how this show is really about context, because like what David mentioned right now, I really didn't put into mind as I was watching this show. I mean, watching this show, I'm comparing this to what I see today, not Raw of 1995 or Nitro of 1995, which is nothing but this. So that makes it a lot more enjoyable.
And let's finish off with Sergey. Surprisingly boring show. I expected much better when I saw who's on the card. Can't stand the Sandman. Probably the worst Ray Psychosis match I've ever seen. In general, sitting through matches of Austin Foley, Raven, and others instead of enjoying it is frustrating. Not good, not horrible, just boring. Sergey not enjoying any of this.
Oh, so there we go. A lot of contrasting opinions, and I think a lot of people watching from different perspectives.
So thanks to those of you that provided feedback for us, and we apologize for the delay in this week's show, but life happens in big increments sometimes during UFC week, and it's just glad we got this done.
Perhaps the busiest week of the year for the Fight Network, and boy, I hope next week will be a lot easier.
Am I cutting out at all?
You sound fine.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's going to wrap us up, everyone. Next week on the show, we're going to be reviewing the December 2000 WWF Armageddon pay-per-view featuring a six-way Hell in a Cell match.
Six-way Hell in a Cell.
Yes. Just in honor of the first ever three-way TLC singles match for the upcoming WWE pay-per-view.
Was that really...
That's their big selling points, the first ever three-way TLC.
Okay, all right. That's not why you chose this. So.
No, it's not. We're going to be reviewing Armageddon, the six-way Hell in a Cell, and Wei, we will have a guest in studio.
That is correct. Mr. Arda Ocal.
So there's going to be John Pollock, Wei Ting, and Arda Ocal reviewing the 2000 Armageddon. So you can leave your feedback throughout the week for that show. We will be back next Wednesday with that. And then later on this week, we're back with Review and Impact on Friday with myself, Wei Ting, and Nate Milton. Hopefully his phone line is corrected.
Hopefully. Well, who knows what the luck
he did been. Call into the law Sunday, and it sounded good.
Okay.
So well, let's hope. Let's pray.
Yes, let us pray.
And then Sunday night, The Law, we're going to be joined by Mick Foley, chatting about his return to the WWE, This Is Your Life, and much more with an interview that Wei Ting shot and Dan Lavransky conducted. So that's going to be coming up on Sunday night, midnight Eastern on The Law. And if you happen to be a mixed martial arts fan, and I know there's at least one or two of you out there, Saturday night, immediately after UFC 140, myself and Jason Agnew, along with Dave Meltzer, are going to be on TSN Radio 1050, immediately after the main event between John Jones and Lyoto Machida. We're going to be running down the card, taking phone calls, and giving away this insane UFC DVD collection set. It is every UFC fight over the span of like June 2010 to June 2011. It's like a 10 DVD set.
Oh, wow. So it collects a full year of every fight?
Of every fight.
We're talking like fight nights and.
I think so.
What, even like undercards?
You know what? I'll pull up the thing right now.
Because that's got to be.
It's insane. Yeah, it's 10 DVDs. Are you going to maybe call in to win this way?
Maybe I will.
USC.
I will call in. I will be listening anyway, just to hear the lovely voices of Dave Meltzer and yourselves. But wow, this is crazy. And you know what? Wrestling fans and MMA fans are definitely the types to buy something like this, something that they may never, ever get through.
Okay, I'm sorry. It is 20 discs of content with 170 fights and over 50 hours of content. It's valued at $135. It includes the Best of Fight School, Best of Rogan One-on-One, Best of Unguarded Features on a bonus disc, and it features everything from July of 2010 to June of 2011. Each event is on these 20 discs. Holy Christ.
That is insane.
So there you go. That is
So if you're a nerd, tune in.
Watch
Saturday.
A year's worth of fights on 20 discs.
Oh, we know so many people in this office who would love that.
So that's coming up Saturday night, right after UFC 140 on TSN Radio, 10:50 a.m. And to go out way, have you selected a song?
This was your pick, wasn't it?
No, you picked picked the event last week. I picked the event this week.
You are correct. Well, let's go out then. Unless you've already come in with this. Mm-mm. But let's go out with some GNR. November Rain. Thank you.